Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
И футбольное обозрение присоединяется к многочисленным поздравлениям с победой.
The voters of Moscow in their first free election have overwhelmingly chosen Boris Yeltsin to represent them in the new Soviet parliament. He won 89% of the votes, soundly beating the official Communist Party candidate. He says it proves the need to speed up reforms. Mr. Gorbachev, who had him sacked from his party jobs, says not everyone may be pleased with the election results, but the Soviet people have spoken.
Вернемся к игре. Спартак провел, наверное, один из лучших матчей в этом сезоне, и действительно, ни одному из футболистов нельзя предъявить претензий. Сказалось не только мастерство, но и характер команды.
It was to Bornholmer Strasse in the north of the city that most Berliners hurried to check what was happening. It was here in the past that East Germans with permission to travel were filtered in and out of the country. But tonight, there were no filters, no checks. At midnight, the border was thrown open and the crowd surged through the open gates.
И вторая половина матча началась атаками хозяев поля. Спартак получил право на штрафной, и Кузнецов изменил направление полета мяча. 1-1.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with The Blizzard. My name is Marcus Speller. Opposite me, as ever, is Jonathan Wilson. And on the pod today, we have Sasha Gurinov, football writer, broadcaster and contributor to the BBC, among many others. Sasha, pleasure to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, we go back to 1989 for this one. Spartak 2, Dynamo Kiev 1 in the Soviet Top League, was it called?
I think Supreme League. It's actually technically probably the highest league.
The highest league, yeah. Okay.
Can't go above the Soviet highest league.
Either way, it sounds very Soviet Union. Yeah. I think we can all agree. Yeah. The mighty league, as I affectionately call it. But it was Spartak 2, Dynamo Kiev 1. Why have you chosen this game?
Well, this is a game from my childhood. I mean, I grew up back in the USSR. I was
Don't be fooled by the scales twang, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.
This is all a massive joke. So I was just turned 9 at the time, and '89 season is probably the one that my first season that I really remember. I mean, I remember a bit of '88, Euro '88, the Soviet team that finished runners up. But I think it was the first season when I properly watched football. And for Spartak Moscow, whom I grew up watching as a child. This still probably remains my biggest memory. Mm. And this is the one outstanding football memory, I suppose, I have from the Soviet Union.
Mm. And it was a very important game, Jonathan, as well.
Oh, it's a huge game.
I mean, it's always an important game with those two, no matter what the
consequences. Yeah, I mean, they're huge rivals. They're the two most successful teams in Soviet history. They represent two different conceptions of the game. As ever with those stereotypes, you can pick holes all over them. But essentially, they represent two different conceptions of a game. And also, you know, penultimate game of the season, it ensures Spartak win the title. Dynamo were finished third that season, but they were already out of the race. But it was between Spartak and Dnipro. And so Spartak had to win to guarantee the league. And the final week of the season, Spartak had a much tougher game than Dnipro. So it was a game they needed to win.
It was for last game of the season, just a bit of context around it was in Vilnius. And then you don't think of Lithuania as a football playing country, but Spartak had an abysmal record there.
What, and Žalgiris finished fifth that year?
Žalgiris, I think, finished about fourth or fifth. So they finished third in 87, which was, I think, the highest finish. But they were just awkward. I think maybe they were a bit like Stoke. Maybe I'm being a bit unfair. but the fancy Spartak
Pulis is Stoke.
But the fancy Spartak team, when they went there, they just always struggled.
Well, if you can't do it on a wet, windy night in Vilnius,
what can you think?
Absolutely.
And also, it was a nightmarish situation in 87. Spartak only lost, I think, maybe three games that season when they won the title. But Stanislav Cherchesov, who was in nets for Spartak Moscow in 89, had his one appearance of the season in 87 in Vilnius. Spartak lost 5-2, and Cherchesov had an absolute mare.
So it was all,
And Dnipro were home to Torpedo, who finished fifth in the end the following week. So you expect Dnipro to win that, and Spartak have a tough game.
Yeah.
So they had to go for it.
And Spartak, am I right in saying, they drew level with Dynamo Kiev, 12 title wins each when they won that.
At that stage, yes.
Dynamo Kiev would go on to win another one. And then, of course, when the Soviet Union sort
They
of
still
fell,
have the bragging rights.
They have the bragging rights of that one league title. But the rivalry, from my own research of this, did it really kick off in 1976 between these two? Or had it always been there?
Well, I think we'll go back a bit further because, you've seen it in England, particularly around Brexit, there is metropolitan elite in London, and then there's everywhere else, the common man. I think if you go somewhere like, say, former Soviet Union, the capital, Moscow, was always seen as something like the separate thing on the pedestal, and everyone was, you know, trying to rival it. And when it comes to the 60s, for the first time, the dominance of the Moscow teams in the Soviet League, which has been going on since late 30s, is challenged, and Dynamo Kiev is one of those challenges. And then, of course, you have the reform of football. You have Maslov coming in.
Who was a Muscovite, of course. Well,
exactly.
But did reform. He essentially the man who, I don't say he invented pressing, but he certainly popularised its use, was incredibly effective in its use, and he created a school of football which, I mean, you can make a very, very good case that you go two steps down the line from Maslov and you get to Jürgen Klopp. The modern German pressing comes from Maslov influences Lobanovsky. Lobanovsky was at Dynamo on and off for the best part of 30 years. And in 1984, Dynamo had a training camp just south of southeast of Stuttgart. And they play against Ralf Rangnick's, I can't remember, sixth or seventh division side. Rangnick was player manager. And he sees Dynamo and thinks, this is a style of football I've never seen before. And he begins to investigate it. And he then introduces that at Stuttgart when he gets, he works in the youth team and whatever. And then, he's now in charge of football at Red Bull. And the reason he's appointed Nagelsmann is because Nagelsmann plays his type of football. So,
but I think the tactical influence and ideas in Eastern Europe are very much underappreciated in, I suppose, Western Europe. And if only there was a journalist who really banged the drum for that. But anyway, Sasha, you were
But there's also an interesting point with Dynamo as well in the 70s. So they win the Cup Winners' Cup against Ferencváros in 1975, and they do hammer them. And then they meet Bayern Munich in the Super Cup, and they batter Bayern Munich. And this is Bayern Munich after the second consecutive European Cup win. So I think already at that time, I think people like Beckenbauer will take notice. My God, these guys can do it. And also, one of the goals that was scored against them at the Olympiastadion by Blochin. Blochin takes on half the Bayern Munich team, outruns them, and then puts Dynamo in the lead. So I think something started coming through. I think it's Zelyantsev. So the reason why they are able to do this is because Lobanovsky also applies science. He looks at training, he looks at analysis, and he recruits a guy called Zelyantsev. He's like, I think, PhD in maths. And
No football background. He's just a
fan, but he's a scientist. And you know what? One thing that Russia did, or Soviet Union did have, is a massive oversupply of scientists.
And I mean, we should do a Dynamo Kiev podcast and talk about them more specifically.
Sure.
But
I realise your brain is going in all sorts of directions. To condense it down must be very difficult.
Lobanovsky was very, very disillusioned with football. Lobanovsky had been a sort of dilettantish left winger. He hadn't liked Maslov at all. Maslov had got rid of him from his Dynamo side, and Lobanovsky was drifting out of football. And
he wasn't even that interested, to be honest, by the sounds of it.
He was a mathematician. He was a very gifted mathematician. He'd won all kinds of awards for maths as a student. And he trained as a plumber, I think. And then he meets Zelentsov just at a party. And Zelentsov sort of is his fan, just sort of buttonholes him, and then says to him, "And by the way, this is how we can use computers in football training." And a light goes on Lobanovsky's head.
Advantage.
And, yeah. And there's a ripple wave, and Bielsa picks up on that somewhere in the sort of the ethos, yeah. What about the manager for Spartak in this game, Oleg Romanantsev? Because he's quite the figure in there.
So this is Romanantsev's first year in charge of a major club.
He's 35, isn't he?
So he's young, but he was a left-back for Spartak Moscow, including Andy Beskov, whom we probably arrived to in a couple of minutes. So he sort of retired in the 80s, and he took on a couple of smaller jobs, I think, in 88, he managed Spartak Orzhenikidze, aka Spartak Vladikavkaz, aka, you know, the place where people get sent if they're really naughty on the European campaigns in the 90s. And
so, I'll be honest with you, even though it's football, it sounds terrifying.
So he did an okay job then, and then he gets called up to replace the manager. So the manager, Beskov, he is not a Spartak man. He never has been until 1977. When Spartak find themselves in the second division for the first
time
in history.
Which is what you referred to in 76, yes. Dynamo, their victory over Spartak is what relegates Spartak.
Yes. So that would take the rivalry to another level, perhaps.
The
rivalry between Spartak and Dynamo.
Yeah, so this would take...
I mean, that's serious bragging rights. It's in the relegated...
Oh, yeah.
76.
So, but I think at that stage, I think they are so far apart. And also it's so early, I think, in Lobanovsky's career... I think it's Spartak are more self-absorbed about themselves being relegated.
So I think of Liverpool relegating Manchester United.
But okay. I don't think at that stage, perhaps it would have been sort of...
Spartak
would be too focused on their own misery, in this situation. There was lots of brouhaha to keep them up or not. But Dynamo Kyiv also did play an additional part in this, because in 1975, when Lobanovsky wins everything, so he wins everything, he's like the champion of the Soviet Union, champion of the world. So what happens in 76? So in 76, you have the Euros, and in 76, you have the Montreal Olympics. And who is now basically free to construct this Olympic team? It's Lobanovsky. It's full of Dynamo Kyiv players. So basically...
And literally full.
Literally full. 11. There's like 11 players that I've got the lineup somewhere here. But basically it's full of Dynamo Kyiv players. So what does he do? He messes with the league. So the first half of the league is basically written off as like, this is the spring championship. There's no relegation. The second... so as to prepare his team eventually for this golden Montreal, which they don't get. Where they finished third.
And he himself subsequently admitted he worked the players too hard.
Yeah, worked the players too hard. Players rebel.
And I'd imagine in the 70s in Soviet Union, unlike in, say, modern era Great Britain, where a bronze medal is still something to be celebrated, is seen as a failure.
I think the way he sort of set it up and how much effort went into the top place, I think he had to deliver.
Oh, absolutely.
And he didn't. And he found some fall guys who were supposed to be his players. And then they rebelled. The players went absolutely mad. So he worked together with Bazilevich. And I mean, for me, it's quite hard to tell who was the most important guy here, but it seems to be Bazilevich did have at least half the brain of the partnership, but perhaps Lobanovsky was slightly less harsh on the players.
I think... You know, when you talk to players who played for Lobanovsky, they all have respect for him, and not many of them loved him.
No,
it was definitely not a warm relationship, and I think that they needed that intermediary to take. You know, it was almost like Lobanovsky's conception of the game was so sort of advanced, and his intensity was so bright. You needed a filter because players, They couldn't handle that intensity.
Which was a bit like previous pod we talked about Rinus Michels, you know, that kind of intensity that he would bring. And actually, when he left, people were actually quite pleased to see the back of him in some senses.
Yes. The difference here is you can just bring in a filter. I think you can make a case Bielsa's most successful spells have been when he hasn't actually had to do anything with the players.
Quite possibly.
So we have this filter situation here. So the filter is the one that gets binned off. Lobanovsky stays, players stay, everything calms down a little bit. And at the same time, Spartak Moscow get relegated. Spartak Moscow here are sort of victim of circumstance. At the same time, curious things keep happening to them, which Spartak Moscow will point to as them being naturally disadvantaged. For example, 1975, the captain Olshansky, who is 27 years old, he is the main centre-half, gets drafted by the army suddenly at the age of 27. This does not happen. And he ends up like somewhere like Kamchatka, which is basically out by Japan. And eventually he works his way back to CSKA Moscow. But this is the sort of thing I have to deal with. Spartak Moscow start the 75 season with like 8 clean sheets and 9. And then straight afterwards they start losing like 4-0 and everything. So it's kind of hit them hard as well. So 77, everyone's a bit distressed. Guys don't know what to do. Perhaps there is a thought that the managers before were a little bit too soft on the players, so they finally make a jump, and Nikolai Starostin, who is like the mayor, the guy who effectively looks after the club, finds the sponsorships for them even in those Soviet days, he decides to bring in Beskov, and Beskov doesn't want to go. He's a Dynamo Moscow man. He went on tour of Britain in 1945. You know, he managed the USSR back in the day. He never had anything to do with Spartak, but from what I understand, basically the party said, Mr. Beskov, you have to go and help this team out. And he goes, well, I can't go against the party, and they keep asking, so I might as well go.
Yeah.
And he goes, and they go up. They go up straight away after
this. Would that be seen as government interference nowadays by FIFA?
Well, it's although it's party.
I suppose those conversations happen behind closed doors, though.
Well, no, these conversations were actually quite public. People saw this conversation were going on. But, you know, where does the party end? Where does the state start? I mean, it's USSR was an interesting place, but basically but Beskov had to go
you finish your points, because I'm going to make something
no, but basically I'm saying, so Beskov arrives, he's a dictator. I think when Starostin is asked later what's the difference between Lobanovsky and Beskov, he goes, well, perhaps they're both dictators, but perhaps Beskov is slightly more velvety. but by which I think he suggested he was more gentle, but I think he was a pretty harsh taskmaster.
Yeah, an iron fist in a velvet glove.
Yeah, so maybe that. So just slightly softened the blow, as opposed to the.
But researching this, you know, am I right in saying that both sides in this game that we're focusing on, Spartak Moscow and Dynamo Kiev, they claim that they were sort of slightly anti-regime of the Soviet Union, but would that be in 1989? Or does this feed into your point about Moscow being a bit elitist and they're saying, you know, we're trying to represent, I mean, I suppose we're trying to represent the workers and the common man would feed into the regime, but you see what I mean?
So, Spartak Moscow always have tried to present themselves as the independent team.
Right.
Because they didn't have the sponsorship of the army or the police or the railways or a big Zil factory or something like that.
Right, so that was sort of like a catering.
Yeah, so union. They were like, I mean, to be honest, they could have ended up anywhere. I think they would, the thing about the brothers, Starostin, those four brothers, who kind of raised the club to be this professional behemoth, was that they were unusual in the Soviet days, and that they'd go out and look for sponsorship effectively, if you think about it. So I think possibly this is one of the reasons why when we get to the 90s, after the Soviet Union collapses, Spartak do better than the rest, because the guys running the place knows how to wheel and deal.
And it should be said about those brothers that they'd all serve time.
Yeah,
right.
For wheeling and dealing when it's a little bit too far. And I'm pretty sure you looked at the documents. I certainly read a lot about the documents, but basically in 1942 they get sent away to the gulags for embezzlement, defeatist talk, you know, basically nicking stuff during the war, helping people avoid
the
service.
Sort of the myth is that, you know, they're sort of dissidents, but the actuality is it's
probably not. But one thing I would say, sort of not in quasi their defense, but first of all, I think for them to end up in Siberia, of course, in camps where they'll be looked after, because everyone knows they're footballers, and you know every camp commandant has a football team that the competition to compete in. But for them to end up there, given that they would have had friends in fairly high places, means that probably it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Because usually you'd find someone to cover you and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, the myth is that they were sent to the camps because they defended Lefenti Beria, who was in charge of Dynamo Tbilisi, but was also the head of the KGB, or the foreman of the KGB. So, you know, It's easy to make the myth and to say and build on that. Yeah, Spartak over this sort of team of resistance, but
one thing I would say though about this, corruption in the Soviet Union during the war was enormous. I mean, you know, if you're trying to say, I don't know, send a trainload of tanks to the front from like 2,000 miles away, you're going to have to grease palms all the way through. Mm-hmm. People were taking stuff left, right, and center. I think the thing to do was not to get caught, and these guys did. And also, I mean, I think a big thing is made of defeatist talk or they hate the motherland. Look, if you're like, say, in your 30s in the 1941 and the Germans are bearing down on Moscow, if you had half a brain, you'd be questioning what the hell is going on. So defeatist talk can, you know, can range from from, oh my God, we'll have the Germans, to, oh, we might lose here. So I think there's a lot of factors there. It basically, to sum up, doesn't sound to me like the hands were the most clean of hands. But there is also circumstances, but you know, they failed in what they were doing and they ended up in the camps.
And as for Dynamo Kiev, somehow a team of opposition to the state, in the sense of from Kiev and not from Moscow,
sure,
but in absolutely no other sense.
Exactly, yeah. They're the KGB. Yeah. You know, how else do you want to put it?
And Lobanovsky knew how to pull the right levers.
Yeah. Yes. But also, I think it's important to point out they weren't just the KGB, they were the Ukraine.
Yeah.
So one thing that gets thrown at Lobanovsky is, and even by Beskov, I mean, Beskov and Lobanovsky got on very well, very respectful. One thing that Beskov sometimes would say is like, I like him, but you know, fixing games, I mean, he could have probably cut that out. What does he mean by that? So to slightly summarize, if there are several Ukrainian teams in the top Russian flight, now top Soviet flight, and there is a team that the Republic promotes, Dynamo Kiev, the other teams would be encouraged to help them along a little bit. Now, if you look at the results, it's not that obvious. I think probably the only obvious one is Zarya Voroshilovgrad. Away defeat in Kiev, home draw. Away defeat in Kiev, home draw. The rest is sort of mix and match. But what definitely was the case in the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, as it was known at the time, was that Sherbitsky, who was the basically the main communist in the republic, did all he could to help Dynamo. And in terms of conditions, looking at these results, I mean, no one, I don't think a single player has actually gone on record to say, oh yeah, this was fixed. But there's even if you speak to people in Kiev, they kind of say, well, you know, you had to fight battle against Moscow. You know, every little helps, if you like. So when you speak about Dynamo Kiev, yes, there may be an opposition to Moscow, but they had a big country effectively behind them.
Mm. All right, let's have a quick break, gentlemen, and then we'll talk about the match itself.
Нарушение правил со стороны киевлян. Долго футболисты готовились нанести удар. Наконец решился Шмаров и поверх стенки резаным ударом направил мяч в верхний угол. Это уже была победа и не только в матче, но и в чемпионате страны.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
И зрители отдали должное новому чемпиону.
Спартак заслуженно завоевал золотые медали. Команда потерпела только 3 поражения, забила больше всех мячей. И хотя осень выдалась чрезвычайно трудной и насыщенной ответственными играми для спартаковцев, они выдержали и стали первыми в 12-й раз.
Welcome back to the Greatest Games podcast on Football Ramble Daily in association with the Blizzard. So then, after all the chat about these two sides, this going into this game was an incredibly important one because the league title was at stake. Spartak, if I'm right in saying, we're ahead of Dynamo and Dnipro as well.
Was Spartak were 3 points clear of Dnipro,
yeah,
who were 2 points clear of Dynamo. So Dynamo out of the title race, Dnipro were playing Zenitu bottom?
We were in the relegation zone.
They were. And so you expect them to win that game, as they did 2-1 in the end.
Yes.
So essentially, if Spartak lose, Dnipro probably a point behind. As we said, Dnipro had the easier game, final week of the season. If they draw, then it could come down to goal difference. Mm-hmm. If Spartak win, the title's theirs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you talked a lot about Lobanovsky in the 70s there. And so in 1989, how was he seen? Was he on the wane slightly, or was he still fully respected?
I think if we look at 1989, first of all, overall picture, it's the Glasnost, Perestroika, Gorbachev and all that. Mm-hmm. But the times are certainly changing, but they're not collapsing yet. So, I mean, the prices of cars, the prices of bread maybe stay stable. Mm-hmm. But if I remember correctly, in 89, we already had some rationing. I mean, I remember back in the late 80s. So basically, one of the things...
Hyper-normalisation setting.
Well, it's... or you could argue that opening the borders in 87 for import-export kind of diverted everything to go abroad.
Right.
So we had, I remember we had tons of sugar in the kitchen because we used to be able to get like, I don't know, 1 kilo of sugar per month, let's say. Mm. And well, we didn't do anything with the sugar. We didn't make anything out of it. So I remember just the sugar just piling up in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But you know, you went and got it because maybe you might want to be able to trade it for something. So there were shortages, perhaps more than usual, but you know, in Soviet Union, we all had shortages. In terms of Lobanovsky himself within this whole thing, I think whilst the country was sort of undergoing transformation, I don't think there was a feeling that Lobanovsky was, you know, or Dynamo Kiev's dominance was undergoing any transformation, mm-hmm. because Lobanovsky's time, you could see that there was 2 or 3 years of peak performance, then a drop off, peak performance, drop off, players rebel, 76, perhaps 82 as well. Then he comes back and they're on top again. I mean, I was watching the Cup Winners' Cup final from 1986 yesterday.
If
you have half an hour, go out and seek it out. This is so Dynamo Kiev,
the blocking goal particularly,
but they could be 5-0 up, 6-0
yeah.
up. Atletico Madrid finished 5th that season in La Liga. They got Filiol in goal actually, and they have Kike Setién comes on as a second half sub, but after about 20 minutes they just start kicking Dynamo Kiev players because they cannot get anywhere near them. And it's 1-0 going the last 5 minutes, and Dynamo Kiev get 2 late goals. But the overall performance, the running, the intelligence on the ball, the movement of this team is absolutely extraordinary. I mean,
that's why I think the blocking goal is so kind of, and it's obviously against exhausted opposition. But essentially, the ball is it starts on the left. And they wait for a defender to come, play the ball inside, wait for a defender to come, play, and eventually you run out of defenders. It's almost like...
It's rugby.
And then blocking comes in at the right side of the box and dinks it over the keeper, which is a great finish, but it's just sort of the sense of control. Mm-hmm. And
but almost with
the opposition is this sort of...
They're just there.
Just manipulating them to where you want them to be to create the space.
It's quite ball constrictor-like almost in a sense, with the... Just waiting for the opposition to sort of blink and show a little bit of...
Well, except it's sort of provoking that. It's sort of going into a space where you force the opposition to come to you to create space elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's so smart, the football. Mm. And, as I say, they've worn them down to get them in that position, but it...
But also they go through... I think if you think of Klopp, they go in waves because the first 20 minutes, they absolutely batter them. Then they sit back a bit and, Atletico get off the ropes a little bit, have a couple of shots. Then they batter them again. And also there is a moment, I think, when... Baltacha plays Zavarov in with this beautiful, I think, 40-yard ball. I think after that, Baltacha does his Achilles in the game and has to come off. But Zavarov gets in between two defenders, one of whom nearly breaks his leg because he's about to actually go clear on goal. But the precision of play is just, it's again, you think diagonal passing, you think the movement, you think the running off the ball and with the ball. It's something that looks really, really very modern. Mm-hmm. And this is 86.
Yeah. So his opposite number of...
Well, sorry, we should say about Lobanovsky as well. That 88... The Soviets get into the final.
Mm.
And they'd beaten the Dutch in the group stage.
Yeah.
And if Kuznetsov hadn't been suspended.
And Bessonov injured.
Yeah.
Bessonov is, if I may indulge me for a moment, Bessonov is was this number two. Who could play anywhere. He could play at the back, he could play in the middle. He actually started off as a forward. 1977 Under-20s World Championship. I think he was a player of the tournament. He scored two in the final, which Soviet Union won on penalties. Again, I think it was against Mexico. And he's an outstanding player. So he's there with Bal, who's the sort of sweeper in Dynamo Kiev team, doesn't play this game. We'll mention it why in a bit. And there was also, I think, Baltacher is the other guy. But Bessonov, I think, missing for the final. Kuznetsov, who is absolutely nails. He's this big ginger centre half.
Played for Rangers.
Yeah, he did, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Players would bounce off him. Mm. Like he would just steam through players. So them two not playing in the final against the Dutch, plus all the pressing they did against the Italians in the semi-final, it just put them at a disadvantage because they destroyed Italy in the semi-final.
Yeah, well, I think particularly that semi-final against Italy, that was where the rest of the world went,
wow.
Hang on. Yeah pressing. Maybe that is the future.
Something.
Yeah,
but and I think it was Lippi said after that game, went up to Lobanovsky, shook his hand and said, "We all play a pressing game now." And so Lobanovsky in 89 is...
He needs to rebuild a bit.
He's been doing the job for 20 years and he's still at the peak.
Which is
incredibly...
And that's
an incredible thing for him.
Yeah.
He went on for another sort of... Well, when did he die? 2004?
2002, something like that.
But so another 10, 12 years. He has a career that's more than 30 years long, where he's never not at the top. Mm. There might be little ways because, you know, you never have a team at its peak for a protracted period. We know that teams go in cycles. And I think Lobanovsky accepted that, didn't he? I think he was one of the first managers to understand that, you know, it takes 2 or 3 years to get to the top. It takes 1 year to come down, 2 or 3 years to get to the top, 1 year to come down.
And you cannot be at the top for like forever.
Yeah.
So they used to like absolutely squeeze the life out of those players, Zelensky, for example, 75 side that won the Cup Winners' Cup. I think all but three of those players retired at the age of by the age of 31. Mm-hmm. So they were really, get the results and then move on.
What about his opposite number then, Romantsev? As you say, he was 35, you know, a young man into this one, but yet he's very well respected in the history of football.
So he provides a bit of a contrast with the previous season here. So Konstantin Beskov, so he's a very meticulous manager. He is an old school sort of this dictator, but he has a great eye for a player. So he actually managed to bring in quite a few, like guys from all around sort of Russia to stack his team, except a lot of them then leave after 2-3 years because as soon as he thinks that they think they're bigger than the club, they're out.
Right.
So, and it comes to a head in 88 because for the first time under Beskov, Spartak don't finish in top three. Now back in Russia, back in the Soviet Union, you don't think of winners or runners-up, you think of gold, silver, bronze. So you want to be in the prizori, you know, you want to be among the medals. So for the first time, Spartak can't. Already, sort of Beskov pretends to resign in August of 88 before the season ends because, of course, we'll play spring, autumn. And then most of the players go, yeah, we agree with that. And he kind of doesn't resign and he goes, actually, I'm probably going to stay. I'm going to chuck all these players out. And then there is a bit of a player revolt and Starostin, who is the brother in charge of the club, sides with the players as he often does. And Beskov and Starostin was always sort of a marriage of convenience. And this is when it comes to a head and the manager's out. And the guy who comes in to replace him is the contrast because he used to play with half this team. He's seen as softer, more humane. Touch again, players breathe. And also he brings back half the team. So he brings back the entire defence and he brings back the goalkeeper who was in Lokomotiv Moscow. Now that the Saev has left, so Cherchesov is back in. So there is a new manager to impress and there is an atmosphere which is markedly different to what it was under Beskov because we have to say, you know, Lobanovsky survives in various spells in Dynamo Kiev for almost 30 years. Beskov was there for, I think, 12 seasons straight. So, you know,
and Romantsev is there for...
Yeah, Romantsev was there
12?
Until 2003, I think.
For 14 years.
Yeah,
and by the end, I mean, the drinking had clearly become a big issue for him, but at the beginning... And we should also say, Cherchesov goes on to manage Russia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of manager of Russia.
So people...
Well, he was there in 2018.
Yeah, I realise a lot of these players are not necessarily well known in Britain, but, you know, the bald guy with a moustache—that's him.
That's the goalkeeper.
He's the one.
He's the one. So we have such a different environment, and this is a Spartak Moscow team whose defense gets replaced. Spartak Moscow team who, in seventh game of the season, go to Kiev with both teams. I think they're first and second. And what happens in Kiev?
They beat them 4-1,
and they absolutely hammer them. Mm. And they, Bale speaks after the event saying Bale was playing the sweeper, a sense, in the middle of the defence, and basically Sport is Spartak style. So we've talked extensively about Lobanovsky style, how it's influenced on modern football. But Spartak are a little bit perhaps more old-fashioned, but they're a version of pass and move, and they're famous for the little 1-2s. In Russian, they call them the wall. Kind of, if you bounce it off the wall, off your fellow players as well. And Bale, after the game, says, yeah, so they just play these 1-2s around us, basically. By the time we rush to one, the ball's already gone. And you could see, like, the Dynamo Kyiv defence is absolutely bamboozled, because this is a very highly motivated Spartak team. Every game against Dynamo Kyiv, I think there was an interview with Bubnov, one of the fullbacks, who said, look, you probably spend a month preparing for this game. You already start thinking as you're playing through the previous games to be at the peak condition, because you know if you're not at the peak condition and you go to Kyiv, you'll get battered. So you have to be at the top of your game. And this doesn't, you don't even have to come to the manager. From under Beskov and then under Romantsev, you know, you go to Kyiv and you measure yourself, the true value of what you are. So Sparta come here absolutely prepared, and they tear them to pieces. And the fourth goal is poetry, because Rodionov, who is one of the Spartak strikers, one of the few Spartak players who used to make Lobanovsky sides for the national team, picks it up deep. Kuznetsov runs out to meet him, but the ball's already gone. And I think it's the other way. So Bale goes out to meet him. The ball's already gone. The bounces of Shmarov. Kuznetsov comes to meet him. There's a huge gap where Bale was. Rodionov runs through, puts it away. 4-0. Game finishes 4-1. And it's emphatic. It really, really is emphatic. And in Kyiv to this day, they still remember that defeat as, really, really hurt for a number of years afterwards. But that set an early marker. Spartak are in the lead.
And they would have wanted then to ruin Spartak's party.
Of course.
And so they go there.
And sort of the central player to the sort of the main creator for Spartak, I mean, I've been itching to sort of introduce him all the way through, is Cherenkov.
That's the last,
yeah. I mean, Cherenkov is, Spartak fans of a certain age, they sort of, you see them tear up as soon as you mention him. A wonderful footballer, but with such a strange story.
Very strange life. So he started off young. I think Beskov brings him in. Once Spartak just make it into top flight, he's probably 18 or something like that. And he stays at Spartak until, with one small trip to France in the early 90s, stays until 93. He is the record appearance holder. He is one of the top scorers. He's certainly... in terms of goals and assists, he has the highest numbers in Spartak's history. And amid of all this, this is a player who spent at least the last 10 of his career and then the rest of his life struggling with mental health issues. Really, really serious mental health issues.
So the first time this really became apparent was in 84, when Spartak played Anderlecht in the UEFA Cup. And Anderlecht, of course, go on to win the UEFA Cup. They beat Forest in semi-final. It turns out they've been fixing games all over the place. A very, very good side as well as that. And Beskov, as we said, a tough old school man. Yeah, he says to Cherenkov, "I don't know why you've turned up. You're just here to get Frankie Vercauteren's autograph." And that appears to be, certainly in myth, and I know that mental health issues are much more complicated than this. That appears to be the sort of the final straw. And so for the second leg, he literally goes in the dressing room and gets Vercauteren's autograph and gives it back to Beskov, and then disappears for a while. And it turns out he's basically in and out of hospital for the rest of his life.
And weirdly, it seems to happen in even numbered years.
So Lobanovsky got a lot of criticism for not picking him for international tournaments. Well, it appears Lobanovsky actually wanted him in the side.
He tried, because he could see a player.
But Cherenkov, in those even numbered years when major tournaments were, that was when he was always suffering.
There was certainly... the other Dynamo Kyiv players in those squads, they try to accommodate, they try to get on with this guy. But yes, he certainly, I think also in their understanding, he couldn't really handle the training. And this is something that has come up before in terms of Spartak players and Dynamo players coming to the national team and not understanding the other manager's sort of methods, if you like, and having to learn it all when they go back. But yeah, with Cherenkov, I think it is unfair to say that... Lobanovsky just didn't pick him for whatever reason, because as you said, he seemed to have genuinely tried to accommodate him, and it was just impossible. And in the odd numbered years, Cherenkov has imperious seasons. He's Soviet Union They had this concept of the 33. So at the end of the season, you have your first 11, second 11, third 11. It was quite a thing to get into these. And 83, 85, 87, 89, Cherenkov is there as amongst the first 11. And the even numbered, yes, he's not. He also, I think, goes to France for a bit and then he comes back. I think he misses the entire 92 season again for this reason. I think he, after he retired, he plays like veterans tournaments, which I think get him out of this. I think, you know, reading now, and sort of the history of the illness, they refer to it as Cherenkov's illness in Russia. It seems to me it is a very, very deep depression.
Well, we've got a very long piece written. I mean, Cherenkov died in 2014.
14, yeah.
We got a piece in the Blizzard by Igor Rabiner, just written just after he died, you know, about his career and talking to teammates and fans. So if you want to know more about Cherenkov, go to that.
Yeah, very much so.
But I think it is extraordinary that, you know, I think if you think of England's 80s and 90s, and, you know, we're only now, I think, really beginning to talk about mental health in football, whereas in Soviet Union, which you don't really think as a particularly, you know, accommodating country for, you know, not particularly...
Well, emotional
sort of place. There was a leading, possibly the greatest player in the history of one of the two best sides, spent almost his entire career suffering with this, and it was well known, and people tried to work with it. But the major criticism was he was probably never allowed to get properly better, and they kept on rushing him back when he wasn't completely well. So he very sad he died. I think he was only 55. But in this game, in this season, he's the player of the season 1989, and he drives the Spartak Moscow team in this particular match.
So let's finally get onto the game.
Here we go.
So
ended 2-1, and then they won the league.
And then they went home, and everyone was really happy.
Exactly.
3 minutes in, and it's not a great bit of football.
No.
It's a long clearance, long ball belted over the top.
Litovchenko.
So I'm sorry?
From Litovchenko.
Yes.
Litovchenko.
Yeah. And Basilev and Cherchesov, so the defender and the goalkeeper, both sort of go towards it. Basilev sort of pulls out to let Cherchesov clear it. And he just takes an air shot and misses it.
I think he kind of gets the touch that kids Basilev, and they're both standing there, and then Protasov nips in.
It's a gift.
Rolls it into an empty net.
That is like you're going for the league title. That is not the ideal start, you know.
But conversely, Cherchesov said afterwards, perhaps maybe this settles us a little bit because we're 1-0 down now. So you know, what's the worst can happen after this?
I mean, hindsight. But
there is an interview with him straight after the final whistle, and he's like, "I'm so tired." Basically, I've spent the entire game thinking about that moment. Thank God this is over now.
Yeah, right. That's the reality of it. So it's a terrible start. It's a terrible, awful defensive.
But I think it's quite funny the way next 10 minutes happened, because Dynamo Kiev try another couple of long balls over the top just to see how these guys cope with it. And yeah, they just about get away with it.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's quite an enthralling game of football. It's very sort of end to end. I mean, it was hard to find it on YouTube because of the way the Russian language is written down.
You know, writing in Cyrillic.
Indeed, yeah, my keyboard doesn't accommodate for that, you know.
Well, we can put a link to it on Twitter when it goes out.
Perhaps
so
we should,
if you're listening to this, look at our Twitters and we'll post a link to it.
If we can sort you out, yeah. But it was, second half, it obviously goes a bit more crazy, but Spartak are trying to...
Spartak
are
on top. I mean, they're dominating possession. Dynamo have the odd counter-attack, and there's that really good save from Charnoff, from Shalimov.
Mm-hmm. Great save.
But half-time, it's still 1-0, and I guess if you're a Spartak fan, you're getting a bit nervous.
Well, it would be an awful scenario in which that, you know, you can clinch the league. Now, I know there would still be a point, but as you said earlier, Nipro would have the easier game in the last weekend of fixtures, but the last thing you want
don't
is
don't
want
to have to go to Vilnius to get
it. You do not want
you're
that.
You're thinking Vilnius.
But also, you don't want your fierce rivals to put a massive dent in your title hopes as well.
I think it's also worth mentioning sort of how the game is played, because you can actually see that Spartak are really having a really good season, a very technical side. A lot of movement, the front two, Valery Shmarov and Rodionov going wide, Cherenkov dropping deep, but also like number seven, Evgeny Kuznetsov kind of plays sort of wide on the right of a diamond. But I think the thing that actually really impressed me is how the back four plays, because Poznikov and Morozov, who are the two fullbacks, they switch sides, actually. Kulkov goes out. Pasulko, who is the holding monument, the holding midfielder, goes up and down. And then Bazlev sort of sweeps up. But it's a very dynamic formation. And compared to them, actually, Dynamo Kyiv are pretty, you know, they're pretty sort of steady, stodgy. And, you know, Protasov, you know, the great striker, sort of begins to increasingly feel isolated up top. Mm-hmm. But definitely Spartak need to do something here.
Yeah, and they eventually get the equaliser. What is it, about 60 minutes?
57 minutes.
57 minutes.
So free kick wide on the right, and it's driven into low to the near post, and Kuznetsov gets a touch.
There's just a touch. And at this stage, I think Spartak are struggling a little bit, even though, looking at the formation, you know, people saying Pep Guardiola against Liverpool back in the Champions League, 3-1-4-2. This is exactly the formation Spartak are playing in the second half, because they're going for broke, they took off a defender, and they put on Mostovoj. So
it'd be nice to see Mostovoj then, because yeah. I think Celta Vigo with Mostovoj, he was there for many years, of course.
But here, he's only a young man.
Yeah.
He's very, you know, enthusiastic, but I think the move is actually possibly a bit of a mistake, because he ends up central and it ends up very congested. So
congested at times it's almost like... It's, you know, if you've ever been to the sort of the Cubs or Scouts or something like that in this country, you play football with a sponge ball in a church hall, you know, where everyone just runs after. There's moments in this game where it does, it is a bit kick and run. Yeah. But not to take away some of the quality on show, because there is a lot of quality, of course. But it's quite crazy in that second half.
And you think it's the 29th game of the season, this has been quite a long season.
Exactly.
The two teams are really, really, really going for it. And I think... Dynamo Kyiv's famous fitness, you can see they're a little bit, I think, less fit than Spartak Moscow, who I think in the end actually do end up running them into the ground. But, I mean, special mention here, I think Ivan Yeremchuk plays on the wing, number 11, for Dynamo Kyiv. I think he was plucked by Lobanovsky out of like the third division. Mm-hmm. Real sort of hard-working winger, and he's, I think, perhaps the biggest thorn in the Spartak Moscow side in the first half and parts of the second half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the game, like I say, the crazy, hectic nature of the game, it's either going to take a mistake, which of course we saw for the first goal, or it's going to take a moment of quality. And my goodness, was there a moment of quality.
So it's still 1-1 with a minute to go. You know, we know Zenita are losing at home to Dnipro, so we know Dnipro have got the win to kind of put the pressure on. Free kick.
Yeah.
Shmarov.
28 yards out.
It's quite far out.
It's not close. It's not close.
It's worth looking at this YouTube clip, which we will put on social media, because there's a wonderful angle from behind the goal where you see the technique, and he side foots it over the wall, and it just curls away from the goalkeeper into that top corner. It is his absolute peach.
And also, like, who are the guys? Viktor Chanov. He was unfortunate to be playing at the same time as the great Rinat Desaiev, but he's a very competent goalkeeper. He saves everything usually. If he can't reach it, nobody can. Mm-hmm. And also, you look at Shmarov, he's taking a left footer. He's actually a right footer, but he's been practicing with his left throughout the whole season. He reckons he can score 8 out of 10 of those. Mm-hmm. This is many, many years later as he talks about it. But actually, if you watch the game, he keeps on shooting with his left, So he's certainly prying himself for this moment. Mm-hmm. But there is an additional twist in this. Was he even supposed to take this? Because Spartak, this is a retake.
This is something that's
actually cut out on the YouTube, because I think possibly someone took the original tape and watched those last five minutes a bit too much, so they had to I actually think this is genuinely the case, so they had to add the other 5 minutes from the post-match review, so they have to retake, because I think the wall isn't far enough or something. Anyway, the referee is not ready, so the guy who is also might be taking his Rodionov, he's right footed, but he says he's a little bit snacked, can't do this. So then there's Gennady Morozov, the fullback, who sort of has been practicing these things as well. And you can actually see that as Shmarov runs in, the fullback actually begins to make a run as well before going, well, he's already going, so I might as well go. Mm-hmm. So I might as well sort of let him go. And afterwards, when you speak to Morozov or you speak to Shmarov, you know, the other one has a different side to the story. But ultimately, there's a little bit of confusion, maybe confuses Dinamo as well. And it's Shmarov with his left foot.
Mm. And it's a beautiful goal, and it wins them the league. It wins them the game, wins them the league.
One of the iconic... But also, perhaps, you know, they have the Marco Tardelli moments from 82. This is the still picture of Shmarov running off, I think Rodionov after him. The sheer joy. It is that iconic Russian iconic moment from Soviet football history.
It certainly is, yeah. And of course, the two sides, I mean, they would go on for another season or two. In 1991, the league was disbanded because of that was when Ukraine became properly an independent nation, if I'm right in saying that. Forgive me if that's wrong, historians. But certainly it was around that time when the Soviet Union sort of finishing and they go their respective ways in terms of domestic football. But the sides, they would meet again in the Champions League in the mid-90s for a feisty old affair. But it's an under... I mean, again, just because of the whole Western, Eastern European thing, my knowledge of that, and I'm sure a lot of other people's, is that Spartak Moscow and Dynamo Kiev is such a fierce rivalry. And it's so seeped in history, which, of course, you've explained for us there. Well, both of you have, you know. But it, that was an incredible end to that season. And for I mean, I know you're a Liverpool man these days, of course. But back in those days, you were a Spartak Moscow
the
man.
The heart is warm. it's interesting to go to a Dynamo Kiev player on this. Very timely, Leonid Buryak had an interview recently. And he... he said that Spartak Moscow Dynamo Kiev was a bit like Barcelona Real Madrid for the Soviet Union, but even in the style in which they played.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of sort of fits that on so many levels.
Yeah. And am I right in saying that the Dynamo Kiev ultimately in Ukraine would feel a little bit hard done by when Ukraine and Russia went their separate ways? Because Russia took the coefficients and some of the best players and that.
Yeah, I mean, even this particular game, it's actually interesting listening to the commentator, because I forgot about these bits. On the bench for Dynamo Kiev in this game is Viktor Anopko, right. who is from Lugansk, Eastern Ukraine. Of course, now we know it's in the middle of a war. Who would go on to play for Spartak Moscow in Russia.
Played against Blackburn.
The guy he played with, Yuri Nikiforov from Odessa, he's currently doing his military service at this time at Dynamo Kiev, so he just scored for the reserves the day before. He would go on to play with Anopko against Blackburn. I also play for Russia. Another man who is on the bench for Dynamo Kiev is Andrei Kanchelskis, who would go on to play for Russia. So again, I think because the prospects for international football were so much better in the early 90s, basically the Russians and Spartak Moscow nicked those players who could have stayed on the Ukrainian side.
And of course, they would have been under the CIS in, or was that 92?
CIS 92.
And in 94, was that Russia or CIS?
The Russia World Cup 94 was messed up because there was a famous letter of 14 players signed a letter basically complaining about the way the team was run, the manager and everything like that.
And so we also have a big piece on that on Blizzard by Igor Rabin.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. But basically, Russia, the CIS and Russia played in international tournaments, where Ukraine would have to wait until, 2006?
That's the first World Cup they made.
The first World Cup, of course, which they did perform very well at.
But it's also interesting the way that these, I think, sort of end of an era for this as well, not just because the country fell apart, the league fell apart, but for a lot of these players, because a lot of Dynamo Kiev players leave in 1990 when Lobanovsky goes to the Middle East. Seems the times were changing, the way the football was being run was changing. I think he was a little bit disillusioned, so he doesn't even stay for the title in 1990. In 1991, virtually this whole Spartak Moscow team is left by then, I think apart from Cherchesov, and I think maybe Cherenkov returns, but a lot of these guys have left as well because of the new opportunity for, you know, to earn money abroad, because one of the big reasons of obviously these Russian players and Ukrainian players, former Soviet players, didn't succeed in the 90s, they just ended up in a completely different world. Like, Abbal talks about going to Israel and he was getting like $40,000 a year. He thought that was okay. Some of the other Soviet players managed to get 120.
Yeah.
But they, like, honestly, these people would have, I mean, they would have been traveling abroad from an early age, but the concept of money,
of course,
in the USSR and the world was completely different.
Yeah.
Again, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of clubs struggled with this new world because they just didn't know how to fund themselves anymore, apart from Spartak, because they spent the whole history doing it. Dynamo Kiev trying to play in a new independent country, a weaker league. I think this is something that was only appreciated a number of years down the line, the fact that, yes, all these independent leagues were all that much weaker because they only had one, two, maybe in Russia's case, six or seven strong sides.
And you see exactly the same thing happens in Yugoslavia as well.
The Croatian league.
Look at what happened after unification in Germany. East German sides until RB Leipzig did nothing.
But again, a lot of those East German sides were swindled in the late 80s, early 90s, because market forces, what? what is this thing? Indeed. Oh, this guy's offering us some new cars. We'll take that.
Indeed. Although some of those Ukraine and Russian sides have certainly tried to make up for lost time, haven't they? In terms of their finances and so on and so forth. But there we are. Less said about that, the better. Sasha, it's been a pleasure. talking to you about all this. I'm glad you could go down memory lane with Spartak Moscow, one of their famous league title wins, and so on and so forth. And as Jonathan said a number of times, you know, if for more stories like this, go to theblizzard.co.uk, because the Eastern European football is definitely well catered for over there. So yeah, pleasure Sasha, pleasure Jonathan. We'll be back next week, of course, with a great game from football history. See you then.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.